How do you know the life or personal coach you are about to work with is who they say they are? How do you know if they can do the job? At the Africa Board for Coaching, Consulting and Coaching Psychology, we can tell you. So, before you share your secrets and spend your money, check with us first. Visit www.abccp.com or call us on 012-751-7608. The ABCCP, the professional body for coaches.
Welcome to Healthcare Hour with Connie Quist. You are tuned to VUCA Online Radio, your inspiration radio station. Now, we know that Healthcare Hour with me is all about healthcare. It's about healthcare practitioners, and it's about things healthcare. We often don't speak about these unmentionables because, we don't talk about that. Sometimes because we are uncomfortable, we're embarrassed, or we don't have enough information. So this is the place to go for you to get the information, to be able to ask the questions, to be able to say, but I don't understand, but how? Okay. And today's topic is prostate cancer. And I have an awesome guest with me who I'm going to introduce you to after the break. And we're going to unpack his own journey with prostate cancer and also how he has now a spokesperson for men to be aware, to increase our awareness and also to educate us. And let me tell you, not only educating men, educating women about it too, because every single woman has got a man in her life, whether it's a father, a brother, a husband, a partner, or something. Okay, so more about me. I am a master mentor and I'm a master coach, and healthcare is my home. I feel very passionate about healthcare professionals. I feel very passionate about us making sure that healthcare in our country, and no matter where else you're joining us from, that it is of a significant standard that we can be proud of, because at some point we all need healthcare. So let's go out for that break. And when we come back, we're going to be meeting my guest.
You're listening to VUCA Online Radio.
Kick off with the biggest character deal only at PEP. Baby's tees and vests, only $39.99. Kids, just $44.99. Buy any two and score a saving of 10. More deals, more fun in store. Life's better with PEP.
Waking up all day to VUCA Online.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. Today's topic is prostate cancer. In our studio, we have got Ian Johnston, who is the Chairman of Patient Affairs of the Prostate Cancer Foundation, and their primary objective is to educate and create awareness of prostate cancer. Ian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Colleen. Thank you very much for the invite. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. So, Ian, you've got your own story, your personal story with prostate cancer. Would you be willing to share that with us?
Sure, absolutely. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer 11 years ago. I've always been very diligent in terms of my health. I went for my annual checkups. And of course, by doing your checkups annually, they do a PSA test to see if your prostate's okay. And of course, it was going up and then it would come down and my PSA would go back up again. And eventually it got to a stage where it was just going up and it wasn't coming down. Because if your PSA is high, it doesn't necessarily mean you've got prostate cancer. It could be an infection. It could be a number of different reasons. It's just the prostate warning you that there's something wrong by secreting this prostate-specific antigen, PSA. So anyway, my GP said, look, let's have this checked out. And I went to a urologist and I had a biopsy, where they take samples right across the prostate, and came back. And then, of course, it's the dreaded conversation where you get told that your PSA has improved, has unfortunately diagnosed prostate cancer. And of course, that's a big slam because, as I say, you know, everybody else gets cancer. You know, I don't get cancer. And suddenly this cancer comes knocking at the door and demands entry. So it's a really, really quite a difficult thing to actually comprehend at first. Anyway, I then went for a removal of my prostate, and that was prior to the robotic treatment. So the recovery period is 6 weeks. It's a very uncomfortable process, and I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. So that was really my story. I kind of got involved with the Prostate Cancer Foundation because my urologist at the time, who did my procedure, was and still is the chairman of the Prostate Cancer Foundation. And one of the missing elements of the foundation was patient affairs. You know, we have a medical and scientific board. We have all the pharmaceutical companies that provide all the treatments and the medications. And then there's the third element, which is patient affairs. And you want somebody who's obviously a prostate cancer survivor who can fill that position and be able to talk to men who have been diagnosed or obviously post-surgery, and just give them some guidance and assistance and knowledge and information as best you can to make that transition that much easier.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Ian. And we're glad that you are still here. And it's because you had your prostate removed that you are still here. And you had further treatment after just your prostate removed, didn't you?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Colleen. For me, I'm a great advocate of having your tests, and I'm testament to the fact that early detection is means that treatments can be done. You know, sadly, too many cases of men that don't have their prostate checked every year, and then they do get prostate cancer, and it what we call metastasizes, so that it spreads beyond the prostate. And then, like all cancers like that, as soon as they spread throughout your body, it's a very, very difficult thing to manage. And those treatments are very severe and have a serious impact on individuals. So I'm testament to the fact that I had early detection and I was able to have that. I mean, I had lung cancer 5 years ago. I had a third of my lung removed. And the same thing, they say 12% of lung cancer patients survive. And the reason for that is because of early detection. You know, if it spreads, it's a very difficult thing. So, yeah, for me, we have a saying at the foundation is don't wait till it's too late, take the test. And that's being September, being the Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, I'm very passionate about it. And it literally, literally can save your life if you go for early detection.
Yes, I think it's also important that we talk about it all year round, not only in September. So this is going to be spoken about in October, especially on my show, because we're not going to like give it a ribbon and shush it up, you know.
Sure.
Yes. So to your point there as well, it's about men don't speak about these things. Why do you think they don't speak about prostate cancer? Or actually, they don't speak about prostate. Let's go back in. You know, maybe we're assuming our audience knows what a prostate is. So let's explain from an anatomy point of view, where is the prostate?
Well, you know, that's a very good point, because if you stop the average man in the street and you ask him what the prostate does, he wouldn't have any idea. And it's centered right in sort of up next to your bladder. You need to between your urinary tract, so it's a very difficult place, and of course it's a difficult place to get to. And the prostate produces nutritional fluids, which is a nutrient for the semen, some of the fluids. So it's really, really important. And when people realize that, they realize just how important this prostate is. You know, prior to ejaculation, men have they call it a pre-cum. It's a certain amount of fluid that's released out the penis. And that's there for a very, very specific reason, because your urinary tract is very acidic. So that little bit of fluid actually neutralizes that urinary tract. So it's a critically important thing. Everything is geared around this body. Everything is geared around protecting your semen. So when men start realizing, I mean, it's men's internal sexual organ. So when you realize that how critical your prostate is, then perhaps men become a little bit mindful. And men like to talk about sex. We love talking about sex, but we don't talk about sexual health, sexual issues. We don't sit there having a beer with our mates and we start saying to them, oh, listen, guys, I've got a problem here because I'm not getting an erection. We just don't do that. You know, so we have this very, very clear divided line in terms of what we talk about and what we don't talk about. And unlike women who with breast cancer, they talk about it all the time. They have it's kind of a natural process for women to do. So it's the ego. We can't for a minute let our guard down because we could be ridiculed, we could be mocked because we're not getting an erection. So there's a lot of factors that men will, well, I'd rather not say anything about it. Even to the point that they don't go to the doctor and say, doctor, I think I've got a problem here. And maybe you can check it out. And when they do go, sadly, often or not, it's probably a little bit too late. So we don't talk about it before, well, when we have the problem. And we certainly have difficulty in talking about post-surgery when we've now got some other complications and issues, erectile dysfunctions, incontinence, and things that could happen or could take place that could impact on you, obviously, post-surgery. So it's really important to get the balance and open dialogue on both ends of the scale, pre and post treatments.
Okay, so on that point, let's go for a break. And when we come back, we're going to unpack more of this, you know, why we don't talk about it, what needs to be spoken about. You know, we throw around nerve sparing and no one knows what that is. Yes. So let's go for that break.
The roads have emptied. Only us left. Kids sleeping in back. Cat's eyes shine bright. White lines roll by. The rhythm of the streetlights. Radio hums quietly. Rain starts. Hypnotic wipers. Pull in. Hot latte and apple pie. Ease back into the darkness.
Over 600 McDonald's open 24 hours. We are awake.
Vuga, it's time to wake up.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. I am joined today by Ian Johnston, who is the chairman of patient affairs of the Prostate Cancer Foundation. And he's been sharing with us his journey with prostate cancer, which also may have resulted in lung cancer as well. But early detection, he's here to tell us the story. He's very passionate about men and women knowing about prostate cancer, knowing about early detection, knowing about the symptoms, what it is that you can look for, and what are your options. Okay, so we've also spoken about the where the prostate is. It's around the base of the bladder, the urethra, which is the pipe that goes from the bladder to the outside of the body. It is goes through the prostate. So as the prostate gets bigger, it can squash the urethra and causes all sorts of problems where now suddenly the urine, which is stored in the bladder, can't get out. Okay. So that starts a whole bunch of problems. We've also, yes, we're talking about prostate cancer, but there's also BPH with benign prostatic hyperplasia. And that's where that prostate just grows and grows and grows and grows. And it can cause little squash problems and all sorts of things, but not necessarily. It's not cancer. Okay. So when should a man go get tested, Ian?
If you have a history of cancer in your immediate family, whether it be prostate cancer or breast cancer, any form of cancer, or you're a black male, it's from the age of 40. And we don't know why, but men, and it's a US and UK statistic, we don't have enough records in South Africa, unfortunately. Statistically, black men are more prone to prostate cancer than white. White men, however, are more prone to testicular cancer than blacks. In fact, there's hardly not many cases of testicular cancer amongst blacks. There's a lot of research been going on, whether it's genetic. we don't, you know, we just don't know what causes prostate cancer. So from the age of 40 in those cases, and then in other circumstances from the age of 45.
So from the age of 40, if you are a Black man or you have a history, which means that your grandfather or your father or your brothers have had cancer of the prostate, hop to it. Off you go to the GP. Okay, what happens at the GP, Ian?
Well, the GP, there's two tests. The first one is drawing blood, and then they diagnose and see if there's any PSA, what your PSA levels are. And the third one is a digital rectal examination, where the GP puts his finger up your bum and he feels the prostate. And it's very important for him to do that, because he is then able to feel the smoothness of the prostate, and any irregularities on the surface of the prostate is cause for a concern. Now, and that's another thing that men fear. You know, ladies go for regular checks to the gynies and they just do it and they don't complain. But men are fearful of the GP putting his finger up your bum for 15 seconds. And, you know, men, we just got to suck it up. I'm not saying do it every single year, but certainly do it once and then follow up with your PSA test. But it's important you do it, and there's as I just explained, there's a very good reason for it. So, as I say, that's the thing that fears men most. But you know, they'll do all sorts of daredevil adventures and things like that, but they won't go through something of slight minor discomfort. So, yeah, those are the two tests that you do.
All right, and then you go and you wait for your results. Okay. Let's talk to healthcare professionals now. How did you feel when you had to go for your test, when you realized something was wrong?
I think the biopsy is the point where they're saying, well, there could be something wrong here. Today, they can do an MRI scan, which allows you to pinpoint exactly where the cancer is in the prostate. But a biopsy, as I say, takes these samples throughout the prostate. Yeah, it's pretty daunting, because now suddenly this going for a PSA test and having your GP put his finger up your bum, you say, well, okay, I can deal with that, you know. But then suddenly you're going for a biopsy, which is kind of a little bit more serious. And as I say, it could be nothing, but unfortunately in my case, it was positive. And I think the realization then is, it's been a bit of a fairy tale. It's been of a kind of, one can't really relate to it in that regard, because it's happening. But suddenly when they say, well, it's come back and it's positive, then you say, well, okay, well, now what? So I sat with my urologist and my wife and said, right, this is the situation. And he went through the different treatment protocols that one could look at. You know, I had a large prostate as well, and the older men get, your prostate does enlarge slightly. It's just one of those things. And he then went through the different treatment processes. In my circumstances, given my enlarged prostate, to have radiation or any of the other things, the prostate was big. It was obviously, the surface was hardened. So it made it very difficult to do this kind of treatments, because you have to do very high intense treatments in order to maybe have an impact. So it didn't lend itself well for me in that situation. And the best option was for me in my circumstances was to have my prostate removed. And then I think it was probably a month or 6 weeks later, because you have to wait for because you have the biopsy under anesthetic. You have to wait, I think, four or five weeks in order to do anesthetic again. And then that's when the realization of what was going to happen. Of course, I had no idea what the implications of the surgery would be, how I'd feel afterwards. Absolutely no idea. So it was quite a shock to wake up and then have to have this realization that you're dealing now with a recovery process that was a lot more complicated and severe than I actually thought it was going to be. So that in itself is quite a mind shift, because you don't, as I say, you don't know what that is.
And so just a shout out then to our healthcare professionals who do take time to explain things in layman's terms, not in high convoluted medical language that no one understands, but also to sit with you to say, you know, this is your prostate. Let's draw it for you. Let's put it in. Let's show you what's happening. But also let's do the journey with you as you mourn what could have been, as you grieve, as you worry, as you're concerned. You know, you may be sitting there with a loved one. You may not be sitting there with a loved one. And so it's so important that healthcare professionals don't just do the conveyor belt of, oh, well, seen these. Please remember that as a urologist, you see prostates every day. You see prostate issues, complications every single day. The person sitting in front of you as the patient doesn't.
Yeah.
So please take the moment to actually be there, to be in the moment, to sit there, to do the journey with them, not like, ah, done plenty of these now, just run along. Because we're not conveyor belts where we just squish little patients off and, oh, run along to the next one.
Yeah, Colleen, I mean, you know, for me, that's my focus. That's my passion now, is to start this journey. We've now got a couple of publications and brochures and stuff, which we're putting together, which takes people on this journey. When you obviously get diagnosed with it, it's to take them through this journey of understanding. Obviously, the urologist sits with a patient and decides what is going to be the treatment. And then the healthcare professionals can say, well, these are the possible implications that could happen from the surgery. It's all about nerve sparing, because the nerves around the prostate are obviously affect your erection, incontinence, because it's very important that they take them through this process of understanding without scaring them, but to say, look, this is the reality. If you do have a thing like incontinence afterwards, there are treatments, there are processes you can take. There's pelvic floor exercise. There's therapists who specialize in this kind of area who can take you through it. It's a muscle. It can be worked and can be fixed. So don't despair. And then post-surgery is, this is the possible implications that could happen in the event after the surgery. You know, erectile dysfunction is one thing. A large part of that depends on how active and how good you were, or how effective your erections were before the surgery will affect the way they are afterwards. So you've got to look at these things. There's lots of different treatments that can be done. So, you know, it's not the end of the world. You know, I try to look at it from my point of view to say, you know, most important thing is I'm alive. That's first prize for me, you know, and I've now got to manage this. There are a lot of people that are worse off than me, people that are disabled, that are lots of different issues. And you know, if I kind of get an erection for a while, well, so be it. I just need to work on it. I need to kind of rehabilitate myself in that regard. And certainly there's no shortage of resources and people that can help. And healthcare professionals are critical to that. So the physiotherapists and a number of different ones who can actually guide them and direct them through that. So there's life after your prostate's removed or after prostate surgery.
Okay, so very, I think, valuable points that we're talking about. And also, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. There's nothing to be ashamed about. But ignorance or hiding can kill you. So let's go for that break, and then we will continue to talk.
No one decides to go into debt. It creeps up on you.
Hey.
Slowly.
Ah!
Debt follows debt. Follows debt. Unless you do something about it. Face your debt problems before they cripple you. It's time to do something.
Vuga, it's time to wake up with Vuga Online.
Welcome back. You are tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. My guest today is Ian Johnston. He is the chairman of patient affairs of the Prostate Cancer Foundation. And we have been talking about Ian's own journey with prostate cancer, but also about how he felt, how he's trying to educate healthcare professionals and obviously patients to go for that test. I'm sure that you, if you've missed it, and I'm going to repeat it because it's so important. If you are 40, if you are a Black man and you have a history, even if you're not a Black man, if you have a history of prostate cancer, that's your brother, your father, your grandfather, please make sure that you go for your test. When you go for your test, you've got your PSA, which is your blood test. You've got your DRE, which is your digital rectal exam. And yeah, it's like a few seconds. It's worth it. From there, also the biopsy, which is taking a bite out of the prostate to make sure lots of little bites so that they can send them to the lab to go and see what's going on here. And yes, you then get it's positive, it's not positive. There certainly are different options. It's important as healthcare professionals to realize that the person sitting in front of you is doing this once. You might do it 10 times a day. Please take the time to have empathy. Also, while the person is waiting for the results, but yes, let's talk. There are different stages of the patient journey. You know, that I think there's a problem. I've gone for checkup. I've had the blood test. I've had the DRE. I've had the biopsy test results back. Now you're waiting for the anesthetic from the biopsy so that you can now go to have whatever option treatment you're going to have. And then, yes, now there's post. Your post-care. You know, I think I agree with you in that the focus is on that we are, I'm alive, but there's still quality of being alive. And a man's sex life and being continent are part of that quality. So I think we need to talk about that, you know, like, as you said, they're options, but let's talk about them.
Thanks, Ron. Yeah, it's a reality. And one can't hide that fact that the first thing you will experience is obviously erectile dysfunction because your body has to readjust to that. And your erections may not be as strong as they were, although with various treatments and medication, there are many, many men out there that have a very fulfilling sex life. You know, men obviously don't ejaculate anymore. They have what we call a dry climax, but they experience the same sort of experience with a dry climax as they wouldn't have done prior to the surgery. Incontinence is something that can happen. I think the older men get, I think it's possibly more susceptible. And I think that again depends on how active they've been prior to the surgery. You know, they're very active and a lot of exercise and stuff, then they're probably not going to feel the effects of it. But as I said earlier, it can be treated. It's quite a normal thing to do. And with physiotherapy and with, pelvic floor exercise, a number of different exercises that physiotherapists give them, then it can be dealt with and resolved over a very short period of time. So, but they are reality. They will happen. And if they do, you just got to know that there's some treatment that's available to you to actually rectify it. So it's not the end of the world. It's just a little bit of an irritation and it just takes rehabilitation. It's like starting to run a marathon. You know, the first thing you do is run 1 kilometer and 2 kilometers, and you've got to slowly build up. It's exactly the same principle. You can't expect miraculous recovery and everything back to normal overnight. That's not the reality of what we're faced with.
And I think you probably find a lot of men come out of hospital and then think, does everything work? And then, you know, when things are healing or recovering or whatever, and then you get the shock that, it doesn't work. And then it's almost like this idea of it doesn't work. No, it doesn't work at the moment, but it will work.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because when I had my surgery and I didn't have any sort of education or any information or knowledge post-surgery, you know, I don't know, it was maybe 5 or 6 weeks later, I phoned a urologist and I spoke to his lady's staff. And I said to her, you know, they sent me home. I had some Cialis. And I said to them, you know, I'm just not getting an erection. You know, I'm taking these Cialis. What's happening here? So she was, you know, she said, Mr. Johnson, you've had a very severe, very serious operation, and these things take time. So I sort of said, okay, I'm fine. Thank you very much. Sorry about that. But, you know, so I was ignorant. I expected things to take place. I mean, I use this analogy often. Many years ago, I came off my bicycle and I cracked my femur, and I had 3 pins put into my femur. And I was sent home on a pair of crutches took 6 weeks to recover. So really what happened is my body did the repair, not the orthopedic surgeon. All he did was set the scene. He put the pins in, he says, here's your crutches, off you go. And for the next 6 weeks, my body did the recovery. And whilst we might feel fine, there's still repair and recovery taking place inside. And the same with a prostate cancer. We might feel fine a week or two later, especially if we have robotic surgery where the recovery is a lot quicker. But the fact is there's still a healing process taking place. And you're talking about a very sensitive area. You're talking about very sensitive nerves. And it's a very complex machine that you're talking about. All these little moving parts that make it possible for you to have an erection, et cetera. So we don't realize that. We try and just short circuit it because we live in this microwave society where we put something in the microwave and press 2 minutes and wait for the bell to ring. And so it does take patience. And that's why healthcare professionals, in my mind, play an absolutely critical role in educating men and saying, look, guys, this is going to take a little bit of time, but I'm here for you. I can help you through this process. And if you've got a frustration, if you feel it's not happening soon enough or quick enough, let's chat about it. Let's just go through the process with you so you can understand what the implications of this recovery process are.
And I think now, Ian, that there's a way more literature, you know, patient information. But picking up patient information or having here's a brochure, go read it, it's not the same as the expert man-to-man sitting with you, or, you know, our woman urologists probably might do a better job. But actually, you know, drawing the picture, making sure the person understands. Not now in your fear going to have to decipher what this pamphlet is about.
Absolutely. I mean, we at the Prostate Cancer Foundation, which is the website is Prostate Cancer Foundation of South Africa, we have a lot of information on there, which people can read it. But they obviously would, it's great to go to a healthcare professional and say, well, I've read this or I've seen this article. Can you please explain this?
What
does
it mean?
Yes. Exactly. You know, and you mentioned earlier the importance of the woman in men's lives. And I remember about 6 or 7 months ago speaking to a Japanese wife, and she was the one that picked up. He would get up at night and he would go and have a wee. And she noticed that his urine was stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. Now, and she said, well, that's a bit odd because you don't normally have symptoms at the early stage. You don't have symptoms of early stage of prostate cancer. So that's why going for a checkup every year is absolutely critical. But she recognized this, look, you're going for your annual medical on Friday, and I think you should just get them to check your prostate. And he did. He wasn't going to have it done. And he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. So they have a critical role because she picked something up that she heard and said, well, that's not right. You don't normally do that. So it's really important. And being supportive of them, because, you know, you need that support. Trust me, it's when you come back and you're now not functioning, so to speak, as a man, because you're having all these problems. You know, you need that support and that guidance. And that's really important for men to actually work through that process.
And I think it's also important to say, you know, that being a man does not mean that, you know, you need to ejaculate or you need to have an erection. You're still a man without having an erection or an ejaculate.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that that does, it's a good point, because I think that your intimacy with your wife, your girlfriend, I think is at a different level, because it's, I suppose it's somebody that's blind, the other sources, the other senses become more acute. And you realize that you know, as men, sometimes we can be quite selfish when it comes to sex. You know, one has to be satisfied. Thank you for the music. And in reality, there's a lot more to it. So there are some very positive aspects to it, but it takes communication with your partner, your wife, and also with people like healthcare professionals to just explain to them how you feel. And then they can help you say, well, don't worry about it. Here's some other treatments. Here's some other ways in which you can do it. And there are a number of them, yeah.
Right. So when we're back, Ian, if you could talk to us about the different, you know, the Suits Up campaign and the different campaigns that you've been running in September. And then we'll close out our session. But let's go for the break.
Build generational wealth and save when you combine life and funeral cover. Take one dealer here. For just 347 Rand per month, he gets 1.5 million Rand life cover plus 15,000 Rand funeral cover for his wife. Or Prisha, who gets 1 million Rand life cover plus 15,000 Rand funeral cover for her grandmother for just 297 Rand per month. Build your generational wealth plan today with One Life. Go to onelife.co.za today. One Life. Changing lives.
Stay woke with Vuga Online Radio.
Welcome back to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. You're tuned to Vuga Online Radio, your inspiration radio station, where we say it like it is. And today we're speaking about prostate cancer. We are with Ian Johnston, who's shared his own personal journey with prostate cancer. And, you know, we've unpacked all the different stages. He is very much about making sure that patients understand. I'm also making sure that healthcare professionals understand that the person in front of you is doing the journey for the only time. They don't have the medical knowledge you do. And it's very much about, where's the empathy? How do we do this journey together? Okay, so what campaigns have you been running? What can we look forward to?
Well, every year we have a thing called the Suit Up September. So for the month of September, we ask people to go onto our website and download a little sticker for 50 Rand. And then any day during September, put on a suit, put on a jacket and tie, put on shorts and t-shirt and tie, anything a bit wacky, and put your sticker on and go to work, which really is creating awareness of prostate cancer. So we have that, I say, every year. And then we also have partnership with Hollard. We're a beneficiary of the Devil Run, which is, we run through the streets of Johannesburg in our purple Speedos to create awareness for prostate cancer. And men come out, a couple of thousand men come out in all shapes and sizes. And I know that a 66-year-old man in a Speedo is not a pretty sight, but I do consolation in the fact that prostate cancer is not very pretty either. So it's a lot of fun. And the motorists in Johannesburg city are certainly, they have something to look at as they drive home. So it's very entertaining.
I saw recently at the Urology Congress in Bloemfontein that the urologists put their Speedos on.
Indeed.
We're looking Indeed. Very good, but certainly set examples.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Andrew did a good job, our CEO, of getting all those guys out there. And of course, on the 30th of September is the main run at Zoo Lake. But then it's all over the country where people do organize their own little runs. So that's fantastic. It's just a great time for us to be able to promote and sort of end the end of September, which is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. But as you say, we talk about this all day, every day, throughout the year.
So my challenge is to everyone out there is, you know, don't think, oh, September's past, you know, so, oh, we can't do that. No, prostate cancer is every day. And awareness of prostate cancer is every day. So if you wanting to wear your suit, send us a photo. You do what you need to do. And yay, you're saving your life and so many other people's lives.
And my message is, you know, don't wait till it's too late. Take the test. It literally could. It could save your life. It did mine.
So thank you very much, Ian. Also, in closing, remember, if you are a partner, a brother, a sister, or whoever, make sure that the love person in your life has the prostate checked, that they go for the test. And as you've said, don't wait till it's too late. If you love somebody enough, make sure they go for that test. Thank you, Ian.
Colleen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for giving me the platform to speak about it.
And I encourage you, if you have questions, if you want to know things, if you don't understand, please drop us a line on the radio station. They send me all my emails. Let's get you answers. So you have been tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. Please remember that you matter and you are loved.